Don't forget to visit MarketingCasts.com to find even more custom curated marketing podcasts just like this one. That's MarketingCasts.com.
Hi, this is Sean Halter, host of the CMO Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and catch up on all the previous episodes at www.thecmosuite.com.
This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. Visit them at nokidhungry.org.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. Winmo tracks every national advertiser, their agency relationships, and key executives within each organization. Get instant media spend, competitor tracking, and industry trend analysis in one easy-to-use application that integrates with all major CRM platforms. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.
Finally, the CMO Suite is presented by thecmocouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You are listening to the CMO Suite. This is your host, Sean Halter. As a reminder, the CMO Suite is brought to you in part by Uconex. Uconex provides biddable media solutions for brands and agencies across the U.S., Canada, and internationally. For more information, visit them at www.uconex.com. I am excited. We have as our guest today, Duke Finelli. Duke is the CMO for ANA. Many of you probably know that organization. It's one of the largest trade organizations for us in the marketing field. I met Duke at one of those trade events several years ago, and we had the chance to actually briefly speak to him last year, and now we're bringing him on for a full episode. So Duke, welcome to the CMO Suite.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
I feel like you've been with ANA for a while, correct?
That's right. I've been here a little over 11 years.
To be somewhere for a decade, you really get to see an incredible amount of progress. And if you think about our industry, especially along with many other industries, but ours has changed so much in a decade, so much. So it's been probably pretty exciting for you to see a lot of that growth. Now, you're back in the office in New York City, correct?
Well, that's correct. So our office has been open throughout the pandemic. Not a lot of people come into the office. I come in maybe once a week, but we're officially back in July.
Where did you grow up, Duke?
So I grew up in Westchester, so not far, 20 miles outside of Manhattan. Now live in Manhattan. So kind of made a return here to the city.
Brothers and sisters?
I do. I've got three brothers and a sister. Sister's the youngest, so my parents were going to just keep trying until they had a girl.
Mine were the opposite. I've got two older sisters, and then finally I came out. They split up pretty quickly thereafter, so that should probably tell you something, Duke. What got you into the industry itself? What did your parents do growing up?
So my father owned his own business, and my mother was a stay-at-home mother raising five kids. For me, I started out in journalism. I worked as a reporter for a while, then went into PR, and then went into marketing in banking years ago when Chemical Bank, now Chase Manhattan, was around.
And you were a VP kind of a branch marketing for them at the time. Am I correct?
That's right. Did a lot of local, what we called at the time, local marketing. The precursor to all the segmentation and targeting that we do today, we were doing back in the 80s and 90s, supporting branches.
Pen, paper, Excel sheets. I remember those days well.
Very true.
You were there a long time. You were there almost 15.
Yeah. I was there a long time. Couple of different, roles during that time, everything from local marketing to just doing branch support to work supporting small businesses. So a lot of different roles throughout that time.
Do you think that your time there has really continued to shape
your entire career path, because you talked about the fact that, you know, your father was an entrepreneur, which means he would have been a small business or a business of some sort. Mm-hmm. Then you kind of get into banking, you see everything from that side. Certainly the impact that capital can have on big business as well as small business, which really small business is the lifeblood of our country. Big business gets all the press, but it's small to mid-sized businesses that really kind of keep the economy humming, in essence, in the way that it is. So do you feel like as you've continued your career over those several decades, because I know your club age is, 47, just like me, Duke, do you feel like you always go back to that? Is there a shaping element, having spent so much time there, especially in that industry, that you feel like still shapes who you are today and some of your decision process?
Yeah, I would say for sure. I mean, not only the banking and then later insurance side of financial services, but working with small businesses and on the insurance side, working with the independent reps. Again, they're small businesses, right? So their needs are very specific and they need to be cost effective and they need to really help them sell, because if they're not selling, they're not eating. Is really the way they look at it.
I was having a conversation with my accountant, which I try to have as little of those as possible, but it's true. If I'm not selling, we're not eating, guys. So, let's make sure that this machine hums to the best of its ability and work our way through that. You jumped out of JP Morgan Chase, and as you mentioned, you got into the insurance side. You also spent almost a decade there. So, it seems as if you've worked your way through your career, you really find a passion, you build some roots, and you really help them grow. What do you feel like from a marketing standpoint, if you don't mind looking back to mid-2000s, what was different between the banking side of it and then jumping to the insurance side of it, from a marketing and communication standpoint for you?
So it's a very different business. And it took a year or more to really understand that, because you are working with the agents are really entrepreneurs themselves, right? And we're at a bank or at a branch, you're part of a corporation, there's corporation standards, there's marketing standards. On the insurance end, all of that falls on them. So any help they can get is more than appreciated. So it's, again, trying to understand how small businesses operate and what their needs are versus the larger corporations.
You were talking about the fact that when you made that transition, it took you about a year, to a year and a half to really kind of understand that business. For a lot of CMOs or VPs of marketing or people in this industry, and again, I know you see that all the time, in your position as a CMO for the Association of National Advertisers, but there's a lot of turnover sometimes from a CMO standpoint. Either it's them moving on to a different opportunity or a company holding them ultimately accountable for, the dips and the ups. It's sometimes I feel like we don't give ourselves that year to really understand a business. We feel like we've got to go in and immediately make changes because that's what we're being held accountable for. But to your point, sometimes you need to pause. You need to really understand that business a little bit. How do you feel like that impacts CMOs today as you see them in your position at ANA?
So it's interesting, so some go in and feel like they have to clean house and do it immediately, and maybe that's their mandate, maybe that's the charge they were given. But I know there are a number that will take it, maybe they don't take a year or a year and a half, but will take the time to understand the organization, to understand the priorities, to understand the general operations, and then make decisions based on that. That's certainly my preference. I would much rather, I don't want to be rash, right? I'd much rather understand what's going on and then tweak or make wholesale changes as necessary, but not go in there with a wrecking ball.
Even if something is underperforming, being willing to give yourself permission to just pause a little bit. I feel like, again, out of the wreck that was COVID and some of the downsides of some of that for many people and many companies, it has been this pause for many of us that have been in this industry for many, many years, that we couldn't seem to find the breath to take a moment and just pause and reassess a little bit and say that it's okay to reset. Especially you're talking about your dad was an entrepreneur, and at some point I think you actually opened up your own company as an entrepreneur, Integrated Marketing Solutions. And so when you are building something that you've built, and again, many of the people that are part of ANA have built them themselves and grown, the expectation is that it just has to go up, 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 up. And if it's not going up, you're failing. I think for a lot of us, COVID was a chance to stop, to pause, to kind of reset, to level set. And you're not worried about anybody else saying it's failing. You're like, I'm just getting through this.
Right.
And then
right.
maybe recharging your batteries or finding that new passion or that new piece of it. Have you found that a little bit yourself? I mean, in your position, again, I know you guys, you haven't slowed down, but did you get a chance at all this past year to kind of do a little bit of that? Because you guys weren't doing as many trade shows or as many of those kind of outside things. Did you get a chance to pause yourself a little bit and just kind of reassess after this decade there? Like, what does the next 5 years look like?
So interestingly, I didn't feel like I had that opportunity. And maybe I did, and I just didn't take it. But, you know, when we started working from an at-home environment, it was, you know, went from 10-hour days to 12-hour days because you didn't have to commute. And, you know, and emails all times of the day and night. And we needed to shift quickly. So we had to shift from in-person events to all virtual. We're now moving back to a hybrid model, but we were all virtual for a while. And we had to change the way we communicated with our members. Obviously, direct mail didn't work as a tool any longer. So there were a lot of things that we needed to do and consider immediately, because you know we're a trade organization and we need to continue to support our members.
Talked about direct mail again. It's amazing how marketing has always relied upon many of those traditional means. Nothing wrong with that. They work fantastically, but this really has pretty quickly upended a lot of those pieces. I'm sure you guys will go back at some point to some version of continuing to utilize your direct mail lists and everything else that you've built over that time. But how have you had to adapt? And as you start to look to going back, what pieces are you keeping? What pieces have you learned within that structure that you think are really going to stay?
I think we will do less direct mail than we did pre-COVID. I think we found that digital works well for us. We do a lot of email. We do a lot of social. We depend more and more on our website to communicate. So we're trying to find other ways to reach our members and also, quite honestly, save the costs associated with the printing and the mailing of direct mail pieces.
Is the position
that you're in with the Association of National Advertisers, obviously, again, I've been to many of your events. You have these amazing speakers, people who really are kind of transforming the industry. When you're there, or as you've sat through some of these virtually this year, have you found yourself personally kind of taking notes or getting ideas from some of those speakers? Are there ever situations where you're like, oh man, that's clever. We should be doing that ourselves. Does that ever kind of happen? I've always kind of wondered that with trade organizations.
Yes, I mean, absolutely. In fact, our in-house agency conference, there's been some amazing speakers just at that conference with some terrific ideas about, we have what I consider an in-house agency. We view ourselves as an in-house agency, maybe not with all the capabilities of some of the larger organizations, but there's some amazing thinking going on. You know, everyone had to be more agile. Everyone has to be more nimble. And it was fascinating to just listen to some of those speakers who have had to do the same thing on a much larger scale over the last 14 months or so.
We as well have made adjustments. I'm sitting in my home studio, creating this podcast. I used to get to go to the big glass box at iHeart in New York City, and that was amazing. Which again, we may hopefully go back to at some point. But the in-housing piece is always that for those who have outside agencies, they're always kind of nervous about in-housing because that's where their lifeblood is kind of made. It's been fascinating this year to talk to a lot of organizations that use a lot of outside agencies and then some that have in-housing. I was talking to Casey Herbis, who's got a fantastic and amazing team. They're always winning awards with his in-house team at Quicken Loans and Mortgage. But it was interesting to talk to him because I felt like one of the things I kind of took away from him was that his in-house team is incredible. It's important. It's really kind of the lifeblood of what they do. But they do often pull outside agencies in really just for ideas and concepts so that they can make sure that they're not stuck in this amazing glass box, but a glass box where everybody's talking the same language every day about the same product every day. You run sometimes that risk of atrophy if you don't have necessarily these outside groups kind of hustling and kind of, you know, pitching to try to get a seat at the table. So what have you seen in that transition for you guys from in-person to online? Has it opened up your chance to be able to maybe have some guests that maybe just couldn't or wouldn't travel to Orlando or some of the other places where you guys normally hold your shows? Has that been interesting for you?
Virtual for everybody, or almost everybody, is preferred, or I think certainly an easier way to get your presentation across. You got a time slot, you do your recording, or you do it live, and you can sit in your living room or at your desk and take care of all that, as opposed to, as you said, you know, getting on a plane, spending 24 hours or whatever in travel. So yes, we've seen a lot more willingness of people to say, you know, to raise their hand and say, sure, I'll be happy to speak at a conference, because it's just so much easier for them. The time commitment's easier, everything is easier.
As you guys go back to this kind of in-person model, I think the thing I miss about that the most is I kind of liked some of that hustle and bustle. I've been to the one in Orlando many times. You have these amazing speakers. It's always kind of exciting to me. One speaker finishes and then everybody's like hustling from one room to the next, or you're jostling to try to get out in the hall, or you're seeing a vendor that maybe you've heard their name, but you're not really sure what they do, or MailChimp is there and you're trying to figure out what their new features are. I do miss that a little. My whole day today is, I think I've got 6 or 7 Zooms, which is nice because I'm not having to fly quite as much. But I myself am starting to, especially because I'm all vaxxed up, starting to re-travel again. I missed it. You know, I missed being in Chicago and sitting in front of a client and being able to see them and hear them. You know, today, you and I were talking virtually, but yeah, you still miss the chance to shake a hand, for you and I to sit down for a coffee, to build that kind of rapport or relationship. That's just hard to do over a Zoom. So are you looking forward yourself back to a little bit of that? And what does that look like for you guys over, say, the next 12 months?
So personally, I am very much looking forward to that. I think the networking aspect, the in-person aspect can't be beat. The virtual conferences are great in terms of getting information, but there's nothing like being able to be in a crowd and have those conversations and have a drink and talk about what's going on. So we see, and we're hopeful that throughout 21, things will just continue to get better. You talked about being vaccinated. Yeah, we're seeing more and more of our members responding, you know, I'll go to a conference once I'm vaccinated, and they are getting vaccinated. So we're hoping that by our Masters of Marketing conference in October, you know, that we may be able to get 1,000 people in person there, where previously we might have 3,000. But, you know, if we could get 1,000 people in a room and have 3,000 or 4,000 virtually, that would work for us.
I've been to several, again, obviously, of your events. I've been to some Ad Week events and Ad Age. Sometimes that smaller group can also be a little exciting because, again, maybe it's not so much jostling, but you also sometimes just to get to spend more time. You have an opportunity perhaps to actually meet a speaker in person. I haven't done this at your events. I've thought about it, but I haven't. When I was first starting the podcast, I would go to some of the Ad Week events. As soon as those speakers were off the stage, I was right in front of them like, hey, any interest in doing my podcast? So, you know, there's nothing that beats that. There's, you know, if you're inspired by somebody like Fernando Machado, who I just absolutely adore, or Casey Herbis, or Jen Say, to be able to, they're celebrities in our industry. You know, they're the rock stars of our industry. And to see them virtually and hear them speak is amazing. But to be able to, again, just at least shake a hand, catch a brief moment, it's something that I've loved. And ultimately, it's the reason why I started, you know, the podcast. I've had a chance to talk to even people like you and all of those people that I've just mentioned that maybe I would have been a little nervous about kind of doing some of that before. Where does podcasts play a factor in what you're using as marketing? And what else are you using that you feel like you're excited or that you love?
So for us, podcasting is new. We started it probably in 2019, late 2019. So, but we did keep it up as best we could through 20, and we're pushing more podcasts this year. We'll have 3 different podcasts in 21. You know, there's not tremendous frequency. We'll do each one twice a month. something along that order. But we see podcasts as a tremendous opportunity, not only for the podcast itself, but then the repurpose opportunities, right? The transcripts, the Q&As that can come out of it, the social media that can come out. I mean, so we really do try to leverage our podcasts to the full extent.
Talk about what other media marketing you're kind of using now that maybe has been different and that maybe is kind of exciting you, because maybe you weren't spending as much time on it before, Duke.
So we are doing a lot more with social, certainly paid social is where we're finding our best success. And that may be no surprise to anyone. We're also doing, and when I say a lot more programmatic, it's all relative, right? I mean, budgets for us are tiny compared to what many companies do, but we're doing a lot more programmatic. We are doing a lot more email, and even all of our committees, all of our events are now virtual. So we do try to leverage those as best we can, to just bring in more members, more members to sit down and listen to a half day event or whatever the case might be.
Do you like that part? Is it frustrating? Where's your brain process when you're learning something like programmatic and the simplicity of it, but the intricacies of it as well?
It was a steep learning curve, certainly for me. And I'll just speak for myself. There's other people on the team that, jumped right in and knew exactly what to do. But, there's still a lot of intricacy to it. There's still a lot of mystery behind it. So we're finding that out slowly. But we feel like it's now part of our arsenal.
Again, even though there's some intricacies to some of these pieces, it keeps you young. You know, it's how the world is today. And, we have a investment company. We invested in a software service platform this year. I learned coding language and back end and front end and Django. And I mean, all these terms where I'm like a year ago, I'm like, I might as well be learning Greek. But it does keep you focused. It does keep you, in essence, invested in what's happening out in the marketplace. I've got a couple more questions for you. Again, it's Duke Finelli, the Group EVP and CMO at the Association of National Advertisers. Duke, talk to us a little bit about your trade organization membership. So what does that look like? Is it a mix of CMOs, VPs, marketings, agencies? What does that mix tend to look like for you guys? And have you seen any change in that over the last year?
It's pretty much as you described it. Our organization, the ANA, started out as purely a client-side organization. You had to be a corporation to join. You couldn't be an individual and pay $500 a year fee to become a member of the ANA. Your organization had to do that. Several years ago, due to some mergers and acquisitions that we went through, we opened it up to agencies, consulting firms, and others, law firms. So it's now pretty broad. So it's the brands, the marketers are still the bulk of our membership. They probably account for about 900 of our 1,400 members. We have 200 nonprofits that are members. And then we have, and I may be off on my count, we have the balance are, as I said, agencies, consultants, and others.
As I said, I've been to many of your shows. They're always extremely professionally run, which can be a challenge sometimes. You guys always have a great book of guests, so that's always interesting. Where does growth come for you? That's my last question. How does that growth come for you, or where do you see growth for the organization from here?
So growth for the organization is for us to continue to lead the industry. We have done a lot to innovate and to partner with other organizations. We've created basically what we call a growth agenda, which comprises four priority areas like talent and data and analytics and society and sustainability, and then 12 key agenda items under that. That's being driven by global CMOs. They're the ones that decided these were the priorities. We've embraced them. We call them our growth agenda. And that's how we're going out to the industry and saying, this is the way we need to operate as an industry in the future. Here are the key points that need to be focused on. We also have created 25 different, what we call business systems to support those. So it may be around ad fraud, or it may be around talent development, or, you know, there's any number of topics that would fall into those categories. So that's how basically we're looking to drive our membership. It's basically providing the leadership that people want, that businesses need and want.
You guys continue to lead the industry. Everybody gains from that, because those global leaders are often, just as in fashion or any industry, they're the ones who set the trends or set really what those areas are that we need to focus on the most. And then that trickles down to everybody else across, you know, platforms and across sizes. So Duke Finelli, Group EVP and CMO, Association of National Advertisers. If you want to find out more about Duke, just stalk him on LinkedIn. That's what I did. And if you want to find out more about the organization, just check them out on LinkedIn as well as online. Duke, thank you so much for coming back and joining me for the show. I hope I get a chance to meet you in person. First actual live event. Will that be in October of this year?
No, so the first live event is in June at our media conference. That will be in Florida.
If you want to find out more about their first live event, certainly check them out.
ANA.net.
ANA.net. Hopefully I'll get a chance, if it's going to be in Florida, hopefully I'll get a chance to meet you in person there. Thank you very much for joining us on this episode of the CMO Suite.
Thank you. It was great. Appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnects today for a free demo. Uconnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
This episode of the CMO Suite is also brought to you by Winmo. Winmo is the most comprehensive and widely used advertising database, providing an unfair advantage to media and marketing professionals nationwide. CMO Suite listeners receive complimentary trials of Winmo just by visiting winmo.com/CMO Suite.